Don't you deserve a Medicare plan you can count on? Well, you can count on a Medicare Advantage plan from UnitedHealthcare. Enjoy reliable coverage and low out-of-pocket costs with a Medicare Advantage plan from UnitedHealthcare. And if you have a chronic condition like diabetes, chronic heart failure, or a cardiovascular disorder, you may qualify for a UnitedHealthcare Complete Care plan with plans that fit your life today and as your needs change tomorrow. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare plans at uhc.com/Medicare.
Hello and welcome back to ACRAC. I'm Jed Wolpaw, and I am thrilled to welcome back Dr. Andrea Dutoit, who is the program director at the University of Nebraska. And we work really closely together on the board of directors for the Program Director Association in Anesthesiology, which is the AACPD. And Andrea will be taking over as president when I finish. And she has really taken the lead on gathering the data and thinking about how we're going to manage signaling in our specialty of anesthesiology. You may remember she came on the show once before when we first were talking about signaling and how it went that first year. And now that we've gone through a second year and we have some data about how it went with the five gold and 10 silver signals, Andrea's back to kind of update us on that. So I think this will be really useful for folks who are applying, also who are advising people who are applying, and it'll pair really nicely with the episode that I did very recently with Dr. Tricia Pendergrast, because she really provided that applicant information as someone who just matched, and she also was able to cite the study that she did looking at getting a survey of people who applied. Now, Dr. Dutoit is going to be able to tell us more on the PD side. I'll be able to provide some information there too, and also some data that we gathered from the program director side. So I think these two together will provide some really nice information for folks who are applying and folks who are advising those who are applying. So, Andrea, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Perfect. All right. So we're back, obviously, and we're talking about application season, which amazingly is going to be coming up sooner than we could imagine, as it always does. And so we're going to talk about program signaling. As I said, we already talked about how it was initially started, and now we're going to update it. We'll also mention a little bit about geographic preference signaling, and we'll talk about how it went last season and what, if any, advice we can offer for folks this upcoming application cycle. So first, let's talk about how it went this past year in anesthesiology. What did it look like? So we know it was a super competitive year. There were over 3,600 applicants to the specialty of anesthesiology, which is an increase from the prior year, where there were only 2,135 positions available nationwide, counting categorical advance in R positions. So 3,600 applicants for just 2,100 plus a few positions that were available. So obviously very, very competitive. So tell us a little more, Andrea. What do we know?
So the good news is, at least on average, with the implementation of signaling, the average number of applications submitted per person has dropped. So that went down from 66 to 60, which is a good trend for all of us program directors. And the average number of applications that each program received also dropped. So that went down from about 1,500 to 1,300, which is an improvement considering the large, vast amount of application overwhelmingness that program directors get every year. For program signaling data, so there were 156 residents programs that participated with last year, with each applicant being able to send 5 gold signals to indicate their top program preference and 10 silver signals to indicate their second tier of preferences. Amazingly, there's a wide variety of programs and what they received in terms of signals. So programs received anywhere from 12 to 268 gold signals, and the average was 113. And then for silver signals, the range was from 39 to 405, and the average there was 217. So tons of signals and a wide variety for a wide variety of programs.
Yeah, and that's really important to realize. I will say that the fact that the numbers dropped from 66 to 60 in terms of number of applications per person is not only good for program directors, but I think that's, you know, that trend, at least, we're starting to get, that's better for applicants too, because it costs them money. Every additional program costs an incremental increase in money, and applying to that many programs is very expensive. So if we can have a system that works for people while getting them to need to apply to fewer programs, I think that's a win-win for everybody. I also think it's important to mention that I also think it's important to mention that program signals were not distributed evenly among programs. So it's not that every program got 113. In fact, 10% of programs received 20% of the gold signals and 16% of the silver signals. So there were a group of programs that got quite a larger share of signals that were sent by applicants. So other than that trend, Andrea, are there other interesting trends in signaling that you noticed?
So, yes. When we looked at our data that we asked program directors, larger programs, or like let's think of like those with 15 or more residents a year, had a significantly higher ratio of signals to applications, meaning that a large program might have 10% of its total applications be gold signals versus a smaller program, let's say like 11 residents or a year or less. And I know that sounds like really close, but that's how we distinguish. They might only have 5% of its applicant pool signal them with gold signals. So that's statistically significant when you compare both gold and silver signals when you compare these big and large programs. So not only are they distributed unevenly, they also account for different proportions of the application pool when you compare different size of programs. And this year was the first year that we did this tiered signaling with 5 gold and 10 silvers for anesthesiology. Maybe from your standpoint, how do you think it went?
Yeah, I honestly think from my own perspective, and I've talked to a lot of program directors around the country, I think it was a good change. Remember, the year before we had only 5 signals total, no colors, just 5 signals. And now we went up to 15 with the 2 tiers, 5 gold and 10 silver. And I definitely think that it was an improvement. We heard feedback from program directors the year before that they just thought 5 was too few. And we've heard a lot of feedback that 15 was good. It's certainly not everybody was happy. And I will say, one thing I know from leading the organization, and you know too, Andrea, is that we have a large amount of diversity of programs, preferences, sizes within anesthesiology in about 165, give or take, programs that we have. And so we aren't, I think it's going to be impossible to make everybody totally happy. But I do think that we have improved happiness quite a bit by going to the system that we're at. It was able to, there were some programs that were happy with 5, and they still could just, if they wanted, just stick to the 5 gold and not even look at the silvers. And that would basically replicate the 5 signal approach for them. Other programs really wanted more and are very happy with the 15. And there are some programs that would like even more. We did talk about that for the coming year, but decided that, in fact, we're going to stick with 5 and 10 again this year, see how we can kind of collect some data over 2 years, see how that goes, and then we'll see what the future brings. So given that this is kind of how it's been, do you think the signaling system affected an applicant's overall ability to get an interview? What do we know?
I think the absolute answer to that is yes. And an applicant is much more likely to get an interview if they sent a program signal, either gold or silver. So if you look at the data that ARIS provides, right, they're the application platform, it's very clear that program signaling was used as the primary driver of interview offers. And gold signals were valuable, or as one of my matched residents from last year said, your gold signals are gold. So from an applicant standpoint, you basically had almost a twice as high a chance of receiving an interview if you gold signaled versus even silver signaling with or without geographic preferencing weighed in. And without a signal, even if you geographic preference, you had less than a 3% chance of getting an interview. And that's pretty impressive. So like, for example, if an applicant sent a geographic signal to a program area, there was the data shows you had a 57% chance of getting an interview if you gold signaled, a 31% chance if you silver signaled, and only a 3% chance if you did not send a program signal. So I think the other important thing to use to talk about is there was a lot of confusion last year about what do I do with geographic signals. And the data showed that without a geographic preference signal, meaning that it was like whether you were no geographic preference or you didn't send the right signal, there was a 42% chance of getting an interview if you gold signaled, an 18 to 21% chance if you silver signaled, and only a 1 to 2% chance if you did not send a program signal. So irregardless of your geographic signaling, the program signaling was the most important card.
Yeah. And so just important to point out for folks who may be just coming to this, you have, at least for now, and in this coming year, as it was last year, you have the option of either not doing geographic signaling or you can do geographic signaling. So what you're saying, Andrea, which I think is really important, is that the data tells us that if you did not do geographic signaling, that was pretty much the same as if you just did it but didn't signal the region that the program of interest was in. In other words, it's probably not in your interest to opt out of geographic signaling. Really, you should opt in and you should pick 3 regions, which is what you're allowed to do, and just send your signals to those 3 regions. Do you agree?
I think, yeah, and be true to yourself, right? Like, just, it's not a game. There's not some magic to it. And honestly, don't stress out about the geographic signaling, because the program signaling is where you should spend some time looking into where you want to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And to maximize your chances, you should align those things, geographic and program segment. Okay. So, you know, this tells a story from an applicant's viewpoint. But as I said, we did ask programs. And so what about programs? How do the signals play into who programs select to invite for interviews? What did we learn from our survey of program directors?
Right. So ARIS gives us the data from like the batch from an applicant standpoint. This kind of tells us we asked programs their exact data. And so I think the answer to this question varies on which program you're applying to. And I obviously cannot answer for everyone how you approach the signaling and who to select for an interview, because I think that is very program dependent. And in fact, we talked about this, but at our program directors meeting, there were lots of different approaches for application review. So this is not one size fits all. But most programs felt like it was very important to have a resident match that really wanted to be a part of our program. And I think that's why we use signaling as a genuine marker of interest, right? And it gets weighed as such in our selections decision on who to interview. I would much rather interview somebody who's slightly less qualified. I put that in quotes because what does that really mean? Or their numbers are a little bit less good, but who really, really wants to be here. So in our survey, we sent this out just after match day, you know, 35 to 48% of all interview spots went to applicants who sent a gold signal to the program. And that's, you know, across, that's instead of just giving you an average, that's like when you break it down by small and large programs. 42 to 50% were offered to applicants who silver signaled. So if you do the math, that leaves very few interview spots, just like the ARIS kind of data shows us, left for applicants without a program signal, okay? But the value is not zero, because there were definitely some programs who you did a different kind of approach and weighed a little bit more for geographic signaling. So when we asked program directors how strongly gold signaling weighed into their interview decisions, the fact is that 89.4% of program directors responded that it was very important or important. Only 3.6% of those programs said slightly important or not important at all, which tells you about, again, the true weight of gold signaling. And the values are similar for silver signals, although obviously a little bit less valuable. When you look at geographic signaling, again, because a lot of people were confused and stressed out about this, only 22.4% of program directors felt like this was very important or important. Okay, so not zero, right? We're not saying ignore that part, but there's a vastly less emphasized signaling than the program signaling. And only 50% of them ranked it as slightly important or not important at all. So that means there were some people that like it just didn't matter at all. They didn't even look at it.
Yeah. I mean, clearly program signaling weighed heavily into the selection of interviewed candidates. I've seen multiple studies that suggest this is the number one most important thing that folks are looking at these days before they look at anything else. But it's certainly not the only thing. So what do we know about what program directors use other than signaling to select applicants to interview and potentially to match into their program?
So I think this is a really important point, because like signaling doesn't guarantee you an interview, and you can't kind of use those as just the only markers of where to go, right? Signals are matter, but they help us narrow our focus into the sea of applications, which we already talked about is a very real thing. So 75 of program directors in our survey actually reported that signaling helped us identify applicants to interview that we would not have otherwise considered. And I think that's a real big point, because that is the value of signaling, because it gives people who might not have otherwise gotten a chance to show themselves in the program's eyes. And the vast majority of program directors also felt like signals helped us do a more holistic review of applicants and reduce the amount of time spent screening applications. So that's really good. We can look at those people who are really interested and spend time getting to know them, as opposed to trying to breeze through and using simple numerics, right? So in the absence of a program signal, though, because we asked this question, right? The most important factors that program directors reported as helping determine whether to offer an interview, right? Again, without a program signal, were, you know, and these aren't going to be surprised to anybody, STEP scores, medical school reputation and performance, geographic preferences did get highlighted on that section for some programs, and other items such as like couples matching, you know, programs that reached out, right? Research involvement, or maybe connection to a program or personal recommendations that came through other avenues. So those are all like, when you ask program directors, those are what they're looking for in addition to the signals.
Yep. All that is super important too. I will say, and feel free to disagree here, Andrea, if you do, but I know Tricia and I talked about this in our other podcast, is that the feeling that there was this past year, and a lot of program directors feel that this past year there was some, maybe some, what felt like gaming around the couples match, where, you know, one member of the couple would signal a certain group of programs, the other member would signal a different group of programs, and then there'd be lots of emails saying like, oh, well, my partner got an interview, could I have one too? And I know that was not looked on well by a lot of program directors. So, you know, obviously, if you're applying in anesthesiology, you get 15 signals. If your partner is applying in a specialty, they only get 5 signals, then you can't signal all together. But let's just use the example where you are applying in anesthesiology and your partner's applying in orthopedic surgery. You get 15, they get 30. We all know that. So if they don't signal the 15 you signal, everybody knows that you didn't try to maximize your chances of both getting interviews at the same places. And that, I think program directors look poorly on. So, you know, don't just take my advice as the only advice you go seek. I would certainly ask your advisors, but take it or leave it. My advice is don't do that. If you can, overlap your signals. If your couple's matching, that's going to maximize your chances of both getting an interview at the same places.
Absolutely agree. I felt like the people that reached out to me that were from a program that had a specialty with smaller number of signals, they'd be like, oh, well, we don't pay very much attention to signals. And I was like, well, I can tell you that I'm not in their top 15 programs. So that I have a little bit more data, and they, you know, and for better or worse, like, right, like whether that was what people did last year and trying to like not overlap and like cast their net as wide as possible, I think the overwhelming response in program directors that I've talked to is that they want to see overlap. If, you know, they don't want you to try to game the system. They want to see that if I get reached out to by somebody and they're not program signaling, that's not going to get you extra points. We're not going to slide away from those. You know, yes, does it happen? Obviously, couples matching. I think that happened last year, but I think the best advice is just what you said. Overlap them as much as possible and really double down on where you want to be.
Yep. All right, great. Well, so obviously getting an interview is great, but it's not the end game. People want to actually match. And so do we know how signaling affected the match?
So this was one of the reasons why we sent out our survey, because like nobody actually shares all this data on the like platform nationwide thing. So this is from our survey. But I want to start and say, to be clear, signals are not meant to be utilized to help programs decide who to rank. Okay. They're meant to be utilized on who to select for interviews. But so that's important for applicants to know and programs to reiterate, like we shouldn't be at rank lists being like, oh, that person gold signaled us, check. Right. It's meant to decide who to interview. But that doesn't mean that they're not compelling data when we look at it. Because right, program directors are also going to be looking at it over time. So in our survey, 50 to 70% of a program's match applicants on average across all the programs that responded went to those who signaled their program as gold. All right. So that's pretty important. And 21 to 33% went to those who signaled silver. So like, it means that those signals were probably genuine interest, right? Like, you know, we across the board, those people really wanted to come. That's why a larger portion are gold signals and a slightly smaller portion are silver signals. It also reflects the interview pools. But I think that it's reflecting true interest of the applicants as well.
Yeah, I mean, that is really compelling. And it does just drive home the point that the vast majority of the spots went to people who signaled the program. As you said, there could be multiple reasons for that. I mean, if you signaled the program, you were starting off interested, you probably remained interested, you were more likely to rank them highly, et cetera. And this really, I think, drives home the point that it's crucial to use your signals wisely. You are going to overwhelmingly have the best chance of both getting an interview and matching at places that you gold signal and, to a lesser extent, places that you silver signal. So that's super, super important. Okay, so looking to next year, let's discuss what the plan is for signals in anesthesiology applications. I mentioned earlier that the plan is to stay the same, 5 gold and 10 silver. And the reasoning for that, again, is both that a lot of people are happy with it, so maybe that we always stay there, but also that it's hard to make changes based on just 1 year of data. And so if we can gather more data, that should really allow us to make a more informed decision in the future. What do you think, Andrew?
I think that's absolutely true. I know that there were some program directors across the country who wanted more signals, right? But ultimately, we're making decisions that affect our selections processes and the idea that we could just keep it the same and look. I know that ARIS's surveys that they send out, they had a really low response rate among applicants, so that data is not as robust as we'd like. So we can always do better about getting that information. I want to also mention geographic preferencing will also remain a part of the application process across all subspecialties is what I think so far. Although there has been some discussion and input and feedback maybe to the ARIS about allowing programs and specialties to be able to choose whether to opt into this in the future. I don't know if that's, I don't think that's going to be for next season. It might be for the future. So maybe people want to just forget that part. But geographic preferencing right now will be the exact same as it was last year as well. You know, I think with all these conversations that we're having around all this, you know, I think the one thing I do get asked about a lot is how does an applicant determine which programs to signal? What are your thoughts or advice on that?
Stay with us. We'll be right back with my answer to that question.
Don't you deserve a Medicare plan you can count on? Well, you can count on a Medicare Advantage plan from UnitedHealthcare. Enjoy reliable coverage and low out-of-pocket costs with a Medicare Advantage plan from UnitedHealthcare. And if you have a chronic condition like diabetes, chronic heart failure, or a cardiovascular disorder, you may qualify for a UnitedHealthcare Complete Care plan with plans that fit your life today and as your needs change tomorrow. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare plans at uhc.com/Medicare.
All right. And we're back. Yeah, this is the hardest thing, right? And it isn't, there isn't a calculator. You can't plug in your application and it'll spit out, you know, a list of programs that you're competitive for, unfortunately. So you kind of have to figure this out. The best advice I can give is that you want to be genuine about your interest, but also realistic about your choices. And so, you know, I've had multiple people tell me that they didn't get any interviews from programs that they did not signal. In other words, they only got interviews at places they signaled. I think this was actually quite common last year, and I think it will be again this year. And so, you know, you want to be really thoughtful about how you use it. I think, for example, if you scored a 230 on step two, I wish it wasn't this way, but the bottom line is if that's your step two score, you have to know you're going to be less competitive. You're going to be on the less competitive side. Does it mean you can't match? No, but it means you're less competitive. And so you need to think about not sending your gold signals or maybe any of your signals to super competitive programs. Now, how do you figure out who are the super competitive programs? I don't know. I honestly think that's one of the hardest pieces of this. But the bottom line is you're going to have to do a lot of asking, make an informed decision. As program directors, we want you to end up at a program you really want to be at. You need to work with your advisors to determine both what you're looking for and who might be offering it and how competitive your application might be and how that might align with certain programs. Again, don't just talk to one person and think you figured it out. I think that in general, you should consider what you're looking for, your values, geographically where you want to be, your goals in training, what you want to do in the future, and talk with current residents, advisors, whoever's helpful in identifying where you might be a good fit for training. I do think that people have said that you need to be careful with things you find online. There are blogs, Reddit, Discord, others where you don't really know what you're getting. So your best resources are going to be program directors, medical school advisors, maybe people who recently matched. So like Dr. Pendergrast, who I had on the show, who was very generous with her time and willing to kind of help counsel people who are applying this year. Those are people who can offer really good insight into your own application and where you might want to think about applying. I will say that the one easy one is the step two score, right? Because it's just an objective thing. So if you are, you know, and I think you'll probably get different answers on sort of exact cutoffs. I don't think there are really exact cutoffs, but I would say that, you know, I think the passing score is something like 215 to two, somewhere in the 215 range. Andrew, you may know, but I think it's something like that. And so, you know, if you're 215 to 230, that's low, right? I mean, it just is. And so you're going to be in worse shape. And the lower end of that, if you barely pass, I think, you know, and I think we said this with Dr. Pendergrast, you may want to think about dual applying because there's a pretty good chance you may not match. Is it a guarantee? No. But, you know, you just have to know. That's a pretty objective thing that you can say. If you're closer to the 230 side, you're probably starting to look a little better. I think once you get into the 240s, that's pretty neutral. I think once you get to 250 and above, now you're starting to help yourself. And certainly if you're someone with a score of, you know, 260, 270, I mean, you're obviously, that's an incredible help for you. Is the step two the be-all, end-all? No, but it is the most objective thing, especially because a lot of schools don't have grades anymore, at least in cores and so, or class rank or even quartiles. And so what programs are left with is that. And so that's the one thing you can look at. You don't even need a lot of help. You can kind of get a feel for where you are in that sense. Now, how to take that and translate it into where to signal, that's going to involve a lot of talking to people who may have some insight into this. But that's what I can offer in terms of advice. What do you think, Andrea?
I agree. I don't think even like really, if you talk to even program directors at big institutions with big names, right? Even they don't have cutoffs for these things, but you're right that like, we're objective people. We want to be scientific. Most people have like complex rubrics where they're scoring like your entire application. And that's why the ability to more holistically review applications in the setting of Signals is helpful to us and why Signals help. So if Hopkins is your dream school, don't like totally knock it off if you're one of those lower performers, but you've got to understand realistically, like some of my people that I matched said they had some reach schools with their gold Signals that they didn't get interviews. And if they could go back, they might have done it differently because those gold Signals are very, very valuable and maybe not going to get you where you want to go. And like, I know that person that I spoke to felt like maybe it was a little bit of a waste. But I think when we're talking about applications, right, we've talked about how competitive the anesthesia match is currently and number of applications. What do you think? I've had the question asked to me as well. Do you think that applicants shouldn't apply to more than 15 programs since then how many Signals they are?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And let me say one other thing before I forget, and then I'll get to that. I think everything I said before, I stick by. You want to talk to your advisors, get a good feel. In the end, if you want to take one of your gold Signals and shoot for the stars, I think that one Signal, one way or the other, is probably not going to make or break your ability to match. So, you know, if you're someone who's sitting there and you said, man, I've got this 225 on step two. My dream program is, you know, I'm not going to pick a name, but you name it. You know, my dream program is University X. And now I'm hearing this and I'm thinking, I guess I can't even try. I would say no. Like, if you want to say, listen, I'm going to send one of my gold Signals to University X and then, you know, the other four plus my silvers, I'm going to really spread out to places that are less competitive where I think I still have a shot. I think that's reasonable. You know, you shouldn't take this to mean that you can't have any flexibility, but talk to your advisors and get their feeling on that. The other thing that might come up is that the ABA, the American Board of Anesthesiology, just announced like yesterday that they are removing the graduation requirement for passing the basic exam. So it is no longer true that if you, that there is a penalty involved or that you cannot graduate residency if you don't pass the basic exam. So some people listening to this might think, oh, well now, right? Now scores don't matter anymore. And I would say, unfortunately, I don't think that's true. And the reason is that you still have to pass boards in order to really be able to be successful and for the program to maintain their reputation. The ACGME still wants to know what each program's board pass rate is. And so there is an incentive for programs to maximize their board pass rate of their graduates. And so if you can't pass the basic exam, yes, you can still graduate residency if that program wants to change their policy, because programs may still say you can't graduate without passing the basic. But even if they do change their policy and they say, now you can graduate residency even if you don't pass the basic, that doesn't mean that programs are going to say, I don't care if my applicants can pass boards, because they're still judged based on that. And so I would say that it's not going to change things much is my hunch, and that programs are still going to want to see reasonable test performance, which will predict future reasonable test performance and therefore passing of boards. That's my thought. What do you think, Andrew?
I agree. I mean, I saw that email and communication yesterday too. And I still think that's why people care about board exams and they care about how you did in medical school, because those are known to be predictors of the ability to pass your board exams. And there's a lot of steps for our board exams. So unfortunately, it's a reality. It's a reality of medicine. We know that people are more than their scores, right? That's yep. Clear. And I agree with don't not reach for the stars because you had that lower score, one little whatever, you know, but we do want to hear about it, right? Like if you failed a rotation or something like that, I want to hear that matters to you. Like, what'd you do? Did you do different? Did you were trying to brush it under the rug? Like, I don't want that. I want to hear, hey, I failed and this is how I hit it. And it matters to me and I'm going to be better in the future. Those people, those kind of things matter. So you got to tell your story when you're applying. And it's a whole combination of things.
Yeah, I could agree more with that. You know, when I see someone applying who has a red flag of some kind, a super low test score, they failed a course, you know, they have a misdemeanor conviction of some kind that they have to disclose. you know, if they, in their personal statement, if they explain what happened, that is much more compelling and they have a much higher chance of getting an interview than if they don't address it, right? Because that's just, we want to know, like, what happened? Is it just, I mean, if you don't explain it, we, who knows? Program directors could just assume the worst or think you were afraid to address it. But I think if you address it, that doesn't guarantee anything, but it'll help. So you had asked me before, do I think applicants should apply to only 15 programs or should they apply to more? And I think it's tough. My overall answer is that I think you're way more likely, as we have discussed, to get an interview at a place you signal and to match at a place you signal. So in that sense, you should think hard about maybe sticking to the 15. However, it can be hard to decide. Excuse me. And people's interests may lie in different areas. You may feel that you need to do it differently. And so I think everyone has to do what they think is best for them. I will say that if you are a super competitive applicant, I don't think you need to apply to more than 15. Honestly, you probably don't even need 15. But I think if you do your signals, you're going to be fine. If you're not, then I think you still probably only need the 15 because your chances of matching outside those 15 are very low. But again, it's up to you. So that's my thoughts. What do you think, Andrea?
Well, I think that there are definitely programs out there who do not look beyond signals, right? That was clear actually in our survey. People responded that, right? But there were also those that do look specifically beyond signals because of the type of person they're looking for or whatever it is that they're choosing to do, right? So we talked a little bit about cost, right, of applying, right? I think you get up to 30 programs without having to go above cost, right? So if you're worried, if you consider, right, like, but it doesn't make much sense to go much beyond that. My best advice would be to, you know, explore program websites, see if they state anywhere. They might state what their approach to signaling is, right? We kind of encourage some programs. Like if you're a program that really is not going to look much past signals, why not just be honest? Like try to put it out there. Some programs actually do indicate how strongly they will consider signals in their interview selection process. And this could be helpful. But the answer is, while it's very, very compelling, it's much more likely for you to interview and match. The chance is not zero. So if you want to, please do what you think is best in that application. But understanding that the return on investment is vanishingly, it's much smaller after you get past the program signals.
Yeah. Okay, great. So another topic of interest, do applicants need to send signals to their home programs or programs where they do away rotations?
Haha. So the answer is yes, or it should be yes, right? Both ARIS and the Association of Anesthesiology Core Program Directors, which you and I both sit on, the recommendation is for programs to require applicants to signal both home and visiting programs if you do an away rotation, right? There remains some confusion around this, right? Because there actually are certain institutions and programs who might choose or actually be required by their institution to do otherwise. But in general, an applicant should expect and plan on signaling all programs they have interest, whether or not that's a home program or whether they did an away rotation. And if you're not explicitly told otherwise and it's very clear, you should just signal them. Because I think there was even some in our program survey data that said, oh, well, we interviewed this person without a signal because there was confusion about them being a home student but not signaling us, right? Just signal them. If you want to go there, just signal them.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Unless they, like you said, if a program director specifically says you do not need to signal us, which they shouldn't do, we hope they don't do that. But if they do, then obviously, you know, you decide. But if in the absence of that, you absolutely should. All right. So, you know, probably the question applicants want to know the most, right? And I'm asking you if we know the answer to this. Do we know how many interviews they need in order to match?
Well, I know that this information is what applicants would love to have most, but there's not a real answer for this question. And first of all, like we've kind of talked about many times, there are many, many different types of applicants and many different types of programs who value different things. So there's no one size fits all that anyone can give you, right? I know that that would make their hearts feel better, right? But the answer is not simple. Second, really, there's there's no database that collects this information for us to really look at. We're all scientific people, right? So we can't even get real data. It's all kind of a guess. And my best advice is it goes back to working with an advisor who knows your application inside and out and can help give you honest input and feedback to really maybe get a goal in mind, right? But again, if you're signaling programs you're interested in and most of your interviews are coming from those, right, that's going to be your best chance of interviewing and matching.
Yeah. Any other general advice, Andrea, that you have to offer for this season for folks?
So I think it's important to remind people that are applying that this is actually a really exciting time in life, right? And there's no true right or wrong way to do this, right? Take a deep breath. And, you know, just be honest to yourself when you're thinking about where to signal and where you want to go train. You know, it's not about anybody else's expectations. You should think geographically, where do you want to be? You want to be somewhere for training where you really want to be. It can be hard. There's lots of hours involved. It's stressful. You're learning a lot, right? You want to be somewhere that fills your cup, that you really want to be, because that way you'll be the best self you can bring to the hospital every single day. The other thing is get your application in on time, meaning that at the latest, have everything, including letters, in by that drop date of September 25th, right? Because that's when they become visible to programs. And we put this in some of our like recommendations that we are published out in the world and on the ARIS website. But like, nobody's going to guarantee that you're going to go back to ARIS and look for your other letter of recommendation or other data, right? Like, you know, I understand that like sometimes people come late to the game and they apply later. That's a whole different thing. But be on time, get everything in. Program directors like people who meet deadlines, right? So just get it reviewed and get it in on time. The other thing, and I bet you'll agree with me on this, have multiple people read your application for clarity and grammar. Like you have to put little descriptions across like every little experience you have and your personal statement and all the things, right? These things matter to program directors. I read hundreds, if not thousands, of applications every year, and that seems really silly, but like if somebody has grammar and syntax errors and all that stuff, I just am like, my brain like kind of turns off and I'm like, wow, this wasn't very important to you. So that's probably one of my biggest pearls, is have somebody read over your little blurbs that you write in addition to your personal.
And I couldn't agree more. And what you said is so important, right? It's not that we think you need perfect grammar to be a good anesthesiologist. It's that you need to be careful to be a good anesthesiologist. And this is just a signal of whether or not you're careful. Because if you ask multiple people to read this and you go over it yourself carefully, you're going to catch those grammatical errors. So it's, if you don't do that though, then you may not catch them. And so that is a marker of whether or not you are going to be really careful with important things. And when we're taking care of patients and we have their lives in our hands, we need to be really careful with important things. So that's why we care. It's not that, you know, we expect that you are, you can write a paragraph with perfect grammar every time without having to check it. It's that you need to take the time to check it and ask people to check it and take this seriously and be careful.
So true.
And I also totally agree with you about the timing thing. Same thing, right? If you can't get yourself together to get your stuff in on time, then that doesn't predict well for you being someone who's going to have their stuff together in residency, which, by the way, is much harder, much busier, much more intense than application season in medical school. So, you know, that's you want to put on, you want to look the most professional you can. That means making everything sure everything's in on time and making sure it is pristine in terms of its grammar and presentation.
Couldn't agree more.
All right. This has been, I hope, super useful for folks. Andrea, thank you. Let's move to the portion of our show where we make random recommendations. Do you have something fun you would recommend people check out?
Okay. Well, this might maybe not be during residency, but I'm going to get to actually do this this summer, and I have not done it since I was pre-medical school or maybe in medical school. But I am going to go hike Havasupai Canyon in Arizona, which is part of the Grand Canyon kind of thing. But if you've never heard about it, check it out. Look it up. It's one of the most beautiful places on this earth, and kind of get away from the rat race and go explore nature. And if you get a chance in your lifetime, you should definitely check it out.
That is awesome. I'm going to stay with your theme of recommending places. So same thing, not somewhere you can just pop over to, but my wife and I just took a trip to Greece to celebrate her birthday. And I will say we did Athens, we did Santorini, which is a super famous tourist place to go. But we did also Naxos, not super touristy, not a place that everyone goes, but I will say it was my favorite. I cannot recommend enough going to the island of Naxos if you ever get a chance. It is incredibly authentic. It's this really neat place that's totally self-sufficient. They import nothing. Everything that they need to live, they make or grow or produce themselves. There is no crime. There is no homelessness. There is no unemployment. Everyone lives in these little villages that you can go visit and eat incredibly authentic, delicious, relatively reasonably priced food. And they do the olive oil. The most famous olive oil is made there in Greece. All the marble comes from there. They're famous for their cheese. And you can taste all these things and see where they're made. And it's just fabulous. The views are beautiful. The mountain where Zeus supposedly was born and raised is there. You can climb up and see the cave where legend has it that he was born and raised. And so it's just such a cool place. So check out Naxos, Greece, if you ever have a chance. Andrea, thank you so much for coming back on the show.
All right. Anytime. Nice talking with you.
All right. Hopefully you got as much out of that as I did. That was really fantastic. Let us know what you thought. Go to the website, acrack.com, where you can leave a comment. Others can learn from what you have to say. If you are a fan of the show, you can follow us. We're on Twitter. We are on Facebook. We are on Reddit. And we are on Instagram. I'm at Jay Wolpaw on Twitter, and we're at Acrack Podcast. And you can find us on all those other platforms as well. If you are a fan of the show, please consider going to Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and leaving a comment and a rating. It really helps others find the show. If you'd like to support the making of the show, please consider going to patreon.com/acrack. That's patreon.com/accrack, where you can become a patron of the show. Even if it's just a dollar or two that you pledge, it makes a big difference and we really appreciate it. You can also make donations anytime by going to paypal.me/acrack. Or looking up Jay Wolpaw on Venmo. Thank you so much to those who have already made donations and become patrons. We really appreciate it. Thanks, as always, to our fantastic Acrack crew. Sonia Amanat is our tech lead, and Sophia Wu is our social media manager. William Mao is our production assistant. Thank you so much for the great work that you do. Our original Acrack music is by Dr. Dennis Kuo. You can check out his website at studymusicproject.com. All right. That is it for today. For the Acrack Podcast, I'm Jed Wolpaw. Thanks for listening. Remember, what you're doing out there every day is really important and valued.